Yes, I am jazzed. All right. Factorial designs are about conditional or non-additive effects. In other words, things are a little more complicated. But the more complicated explanation captures more information and does more for us. Let's start with something absolutely theoretically important in our world. Brownies. Worthy of serious study and research. The usual brownie is made with 4 blocks of chocolate, 2 cups of sugar. Replicated research tells us that the average rating of brownies made with this recipe is about 3 on a 10-point scale. That's awful. The average is 3 out of 10? Can't we do better, you say? Can't all of our science directed at the glory of brownies do better than that? We need a theory. Because the best research hypotheses come from theory. The best designs and data analysis come from research hypotheses. My theory? People don't really like brownies. What they like is fudge. So, according to my theory, making brownies more fudge-like will make them better liked. How do you make them more fudge-like, you ask? Add more sugar and add more chocolate. That's my theory. Let's go test it. You know how programmatic research works. You start somewhere simple. You keep looking until you get a more complete answer. So, by the way, we used to actually do this live. We used to do this in a laboratory. The TAs would come over to the house and we would mix up a batch, several different batches of brownies, wrap them up, and we would run this in lab. We would eat the brownies, we would do the ratings, we would put it into a database and analyze the data. We're not allowed to do that anymore. I'm only allowed to give you professionally prepared, individually wrapped foods. Strangely, nobody wants to make the crappy brownies so that we can run a study. All right, we made up several batches of brownies and asked people to taste a standardized amount of brownie after rinsing their mouth with water, eating an unsalted saltine. What the hell is an unsalted saltine? And rinsing their mouth a second time. We used the same 10-point rating scale. 1, this is the worst plain brownie I've ever had. 10, this is the best plain brownie I've ever had. Our first study looks at sugar. Here's the usual amount of sugar. Here's extra sugar. Son of a gun, more sugar, better brownies. Notice we replicated the usual brownie, and then we got better ratings from a more sugared brownie. Now we look at the amount of chocolate. Bummer. When we added chocolate, the quality of the brownie didn't go up. In fact, it went down. What the hell's going on? Well, do you know what unsweetened chocolate is? Unsweetened chocolate has no sugar in it. It tastes like chocolate dust. Here's my unsweetened chocolate story. I was a Nestle's Quick sneaker. You know the Nestle's Quick? Pop that top off, get that spoon out. Yeah, you do. So I'm up on the counter with my Nestle's Quick. And I look up and on the top shelf in this brown metal can, it says Hershey's Genuine Chocolate. Genuine chocolate. What's this shit I've been eating? I'm here. Mom walks in the door. No, I insist. Go ahead. And I stuff this chocolate dust into my mouth. It tastes like utter crap. That's what more of didn't make brownies better. So how's our theory doing? How's my knees doing? One side argues we have partial support for the theory. Adding sugar helped, but adding chocolate didn't. The other side says we haven't tested the theory. I added sugar in one study. I added chocolate in the other. But according to this bunch of groaners, the theory was adding more of both. We need a research design that's multivariate, that allows us to manipulate the amount of sugar and the amount of chocolate at the same time. This is an outgrowth of something we studied carefully in Unit 3. 2-group designs just won't cut it. We need multiple conditions that allow different comparisons, that allow us to test richer hypotheses. This is just an outgrowth of that. So what we need is the whole design that allows us to check the whole story. These are the results we already have. The classic brownie with 2 cups of sugar and 4 blocks of chocolate gave us a 3. We added 2 cups of sugar, things got better. We added 4 blocks of chocolate, things got worse. What's going to happen when we do both? We can estimate what's going to happen when we add both sugar and chocolate at the same time. The standard brownie's 3. The sugar effect is to make things 2 better. The chocolate effect is to make things 1 worse. So if we put them together, we expect things to get 1 better. And we expect that a 4-cup, 8-block brownie is going to give us about a 4. What we get is 9. What's going on? The effect of adding both simultaneously is 6, not 1. This is what's called a non-additive joint effect. The effect of 2 things at the same time is not what you would expect after looking at one by itself versus the other by itself. The other fancy word for a non-additive joint effect is it's an interaction. The joint effect of adding both is not predictable as the sum of the effects of adding them individually. Look at it this way. Does adding sugar help? Yes. Adding sugar for 4 blocks of chocolate helps. Adding sugar for 6 blocks of chocolate helps. In fact, it helps a lot more. Does adding sugar help? Sometimes. Remember I told you sometimes maybe it depends? That's the heart and soul of behavioral sciences and brownies. So if I have 2 cups of sugar, adding chocolate makes the brownie worse. But if I have 4 cups of sugar, adding chocolate makes the brownie magical. This is an interaction. This is what is everywhere in the study of behavior. Sometimes, maybe, it depends. Not all effects can be captured by looking at one variable at a time. Most of the really good shit requires at least 2, if not larger, designs that allow us to manipulate more than one thing at a time. Factorial designs, because they allow us to look for conditional effects, because they allow us to look for interactions, set us up to take the world apart and get it right. Bivariate analyses, which we have worked so hard to get so good at, and many of you have just crushed it. Here we go. Here's a couple of kinds of interactions that are particularly interesting. An augmenting interaction is when you put 2 things together and you get more out of the 2 of them that you expected to get by looking at what you get out of each. So up in the upper left-hand corner, we have the basic 10 practices, no feedback. Upper right, when we add 20 practices, we get a 5-point improvement. Lower left, when we add feedback, we get a 10-point improvement. So we get 5 out of one, 10 out of the other, ought to get about 15 out of the 2 together. But no, we get an interaction. We get an augmenting interaction. The combined effect of adding feedback and practice is huge. It's not 15, it's 35. You with me? And let's be honest, that's what we're always hoping for. We're hoping to do one thing that's smart and good, it makes things better, and do something else that's smart and good and makes things better, and have the 2 work together to make things wonderful. That's what we're hoping for. That's called an augmenting interaction. The effect of the two variables together is greater than would be expected as the additive effect. Bummer Bob time. Sometimes they have what are called interfering interactions. So we have audience, no audience, and audience. The little tilde sign means not. It's a leftover from symbolic logic days. and we have whether or not they have an audience and whether or not they have a reward. So the control condition, the base condition, is no audience, no reward. People score about 10. If I reward you, I get about a 10-point improvement. If I put you in front of an audience, I get about a 15-point improvement. I don't know if you've had social psychology or this stuff, but an audience effect is huge. They've gotten it in, last time I looked, 20 or 25 different species. Cockroaches, ants show an audience effect. You put a cockroach running down a runway with a bunch of cockroaches watching it, it runs faster. Okay? If you have somebody watching and paying attention, there have been some studies that suggest that most tutoring effects are, in fact, audience effects. You're there in front of it, maybe because you're paying for it, and you work a little harder and you get a little bit more out of it. But audience effects are huge. They're everywhere. So, big shock. Reward makes things better. No shock. Audience makes things better. But when you put them together, you didn't get nearly the improvement that you expected. Right? When we put them together, instead of a 10 points out of one and 15 points out of the other, so we'd expect a 25-point improvement, we only get 5. Interaction patterns are desperately trying to tell you something else is going on. Let me say that again. Interaction patterns, particularly funky ones, are letting you know that there's something else going on. Over here, when you have more practices and feedback after each practice, what's going on in your head is what's called the epiphany effect. You've all experienced the epiphany effect when doing pink things. That's why there's so damn many of the pink things. You're doing them, you're getting them, you're doing them, you're getting them, you're not getting them, and it's like, oh shit, and you don't miss another one. With good feedback and enough practices, the switch hits. That's the non-additive combination. There's something else going on. Over here with the reward and audience effect, we know that if I give you a promise of reward, it juices you a little bit. You're a little bit more motivated. You're a little bit more piqued. We know that if we put you in front of an audience, we know that you're also juiced a little bit more. We also know that the relationship between amount of stimulation and performance goes like this, not like that. That if you get too juiced, you perform badly. Right? We've all been bored and sucked, and we've all been freaked out and sucked. And we all know that there's a magical amount that gets the best performance. Well, what's going on over here in this interfering interaction is that I've got you juiced up from the reward, I've got you juiced up from the audience, and the two together push you over the hill. And we don't get as much improvement as you would expect. This is what we can do with factorial designs that we can't do two or three conditions at a time. Because we can watch multiple things operate and hypothesize about the other things that are going on. So what we need to be able to do is look at a factorial design, draw the boxes, label the boxes, and be able to describe the effects that we see in that factorial design. That's the first and most important thing we need to be able to do. We need to set up the design, and then we need to look at the results and be able to think and describe what it is we've seen. So here's a long-winded description of how this works. 40 clients volunteered to participate in a research project. We were looking at two things: initial diagnosis, general or social anxiety, and the type of therapy, individual or group therapy. Here's what that looks like laid out as a factorial design. Two types of therapy, group and individual. Two kinds of diagnosis, general anxiety. The participants in each cell of this design, the four cells in the middle, have a unique combination of IV conditions. Two variables define how each person was treated. We're used to a single factor design where one variable describes what condition you're in. Now, because it's a factorial design, we need two variables to define what condition you're in. What type of therapy did you get, and what kind of diagnosis did you have?